Love Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and happy Shabbat to one and all, wherever you may be on this Friday Eve as we begin the Shabbat. My pleasure to be with you. We have Kirk here. We might also have JB if he's here. He has the switchboard open and will be able to bring himself in. How are you, Kirk?
I'm wonderful. Thank you very much.
We so that those who maybe haven't listened, we did record an observations program today. We began on the utter stupidity of the United Nations declaring that the gravesite of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob, the patriarchs of the covenant, of the Torah, of Yahweh, of Israel, they declared that was a Palestinian World Heritage Site.
But then I think all the real Palestinians should show up there.
So I guess that Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob were Palestinians. They were Philistines. Didn't know that.
Yeah, that's why they were fighting all the time against the Hebrews.
The degree of stupidity of world governing bodies is almost beyond belief. And then we went to the ultimate stupidity, which was Donald Trump retweeting a video clip of him pummeling a logo of CNN out of WrestleMania that was posted by Hans Effen Solo on a Reddit site that aggrandizes Trump, treats him as he is the great God and savior of the world. And the guy that came up with it originally turns out to be a anti-Semite and a racist. And Trump retweeted his video.
Well, we're known by our bedfellows, aren't we?
Oh, my. It's not the first time he's made that kind of mistake. But, you know, I have a tendency to leap before I look. Always been my way of going about things. You know, I've just figured out that I'm trying to be prepared in the things that I do. And like you saw that, those of you who I sent the my preparation notes for Coast to Coast, you know, like 20 pages, 25 pages of preparation notes that I have put together. I only got to use about 5% of them. But, you know, I do try to be prepared, but I'm always willing to be extemporaneous and leap out there and then figure it out along the way. But, you know, I'm not President of the United States. You know, I'm not the commander-in-chief of the world's most devastating military in human history. And as commander-in-chief, he just ought not leap before he thinks. And what he did in that pummeling of CNN, not only was it in poor taste for a president to be pummeling a network graphically, violently, and bragging about it, but to have taken something from a guy whose
racist
approach to life is just repulsive.
Yes.
It's a sad day. It's embarrassing. He's an extraordinary embarrassment as a president. I know there's some of you listening still have little tidbits of politics in your veins, and some of you might think that he is a swell guy. And I'm not saying that he is worse than the person he ran against, but I'm telling you, that man is he's bad news. Yeah, he exemplifies what Yahweh wrote about Shaul. With one exception, Shaul was presented as there was none that was more good than Shaul. Shaul epitomized good from a human perspective. I don't think one would say that of Donald Trump. All right. Well, we're going to return to Barresheet. We're dedicating the next programs to really one word, but that one word we're going to see its relevance juxtaposed to other words. The word is henna. We have been pursuing an understanding of henna because Yahweh used henna in Yeshayah 3:1 to say, "Behold, pay attention, look up." The details here now are extremely important. When he announced that he was withholding from Yehuda and from Jerusalem the source of his resolution, the source of his redemption, the source of his remedy for humankind. And so when he says something like that and uses henna to introduce it, it is incumbent upon us, I think, to spend some time investigating the word. Henna, like another word we're going to discuss here in a moment, Asher, is an extremely revealing term, and Yahweh's words are loaded. They are they're like diamonds that have been chiseled to perfection, such that there are facets of light that emanate from all angles, depending on how the light is comes in and how it the vantage point of the viewer, and so there is a lot we can learn from investigating how this word was used, and that's what we're going to do. So I'm going to return to Barresheet 1:27 again. So this is the first chapter of Barresheet. This is the beginning of God's relationship with humankind, and he says the following. And as I read this, what I would like everyone to do is to think, what is it about trees that would cause God to provide instruction like this? What is it about trees that if we look at the details and closely examine them, we can figure out something germane about who Yahweh is and what he's offering? It reads, pay attention. Behold, something important is being emphasized. Be observant, look up, and listen carefully to the insights. Notice the details and consider the context, because I have offered something, placing it before you to facilitate your approach. Now, that is an amplification of henna. I have provided on your behalf every plant producing seeds, which beneficially show the way to the relationship, providing the blessing of an upright, fortuitous, and elevated state, joyful and a happy attitude, and an encouraged and content mindset to those walking the correct way along the right path to a blessed and prosperous life, by way of this teaching and guidance, which now appears throughout the realm. Well, not all of that, but much of that, came courtesy of Asher. Also, therefore, every tree provides the blessing of an upright and elevated state, joyful attitude, and a content mindset to those walking the correct way along the proper, specific, and certain path to abundant life. The fruit, offspring, and harvest of those trees are sowing seeds, thereby producing descendants and conceiving a family for your benefit and for your approach. They exist for you to consume as nourishment. Devouring them is a symbol of what is true, even unexpected, all surely and indeed serving to emphasize and properly designate the means to draw near. So my first question would be, what is it about a tree blaming the way to draw near to God?
Well, it's
up there. You know, a tree, if we're aware of a concept called photosynthesis. So a tree literally grows on light. It absorbs light to grow. And it goes through a transformation process between light energy, the nutrients in the soil, and water. So there's three things that cause a tree to grow and to produce viable offspring, to be nurturing nutrients from the soil. From Yahweh's perspective, there's nothing more important than the land. The land is Yisrael. The land is Yahudah. The land is Jerusalem. The land is Moriah. The land is Zion. That's the land. When you're properly grounded in what Yahweh has conveyed relative to the land of Israel, and you know the source from which redemption flows, which would be Jerusalem, you know the signposts along the way, Zion. You know the importance of revering Yah, Moriah. You understand why the land is associated with Israel, individuals who engage and endure with God. When you understand that the heart of a land is Yahudah, means to relate to Yah and to be related to Yah, that the land plus water, the source of life, the universal solvent for cleansing, and light, which represents Yahweh, when those three things are combined, the tree grows. The tree is healthy. It's beneficial. It produces offspring through its fruit. And it's stunning how this metaphor of the tree, when you look at the details, you pay attention, you henna, all of a sudden it's just laid before you of how important the tree is. You know, a tree that lays on its side, that's bowed down because it is broken, doesn't absorb enough light. Its fruit is in the ground and it rots. A tree has to stand up. It's got to have a firm trunk, like a solid backbone. But it's got to be upright, just as we must be. It's got to reach up to the light to live. It's got to branch out to grow. It's so symbolic of Yahweh wanting us to reach out to the light to grow, to reach out to Him. The branch is symbolic of Yahweh reaching out to us. It's the ultimate symbol of Yahusha. And that branch, that tree, has to be firmly rooted in the land. If it's not firmly rooted, the first time the wind blows, it'll blow right over.
That's right. Deep roots.
Yeah. Deep roots in the land. Must have sufficient water. Must be able to embrace the light. You know, when God talks about horticulture, trees, what he says is true, but he's seldom ever talking about trees or plants. It's always a symbol for something far more profound. And just in this case, if you understand what it is that makes a tree special, healthy, how it works, how it grows. You know, a tree, a fruit tree is one of those things where you can have your cake and eat it too.
Mm-hmm.
You can eat the fruit and still plant the seed. A marvelous thing. And, of course, with trees, you have all the nuts with the proteins and the fruit with the carbohydrates. A very balanced diet. The tree, nothing has to be killed to live. And, you know, in Eden, there was no death. The tree was the perfect source of nourishment. It doesn't have to die for us to be nourished by it.
And a shelter.
And it provides shelter. And when a tree does finally succumb, you can use its word, its wood to build a fire. And, well, I can't prove it, that Adam and Eve made some rip-roaring fires. And some of those nights there in Eden, they sat around the fire for warmth just because of the enlightenment and the enjoyment, the sound, the smell of that fire, and talked together. So even the fire makes the wood.
Yeah.
The wood of that tree, too, became the upright pillar of the tabernacle.
Indeed it did, yes.
The wood of the tree is also
the upright pillar, and you've got,
You can put tent peg, by the way, the Wah in Yahweh's name.
Mm-hmm.
We think of tent pegs as metals, kind of a hooked metal. They weren't then.
No.
They're pieces of wood. The wood created the increase. And Yahweh constantly talks about coming into the presence, the feminine, maternal presence of his light, the Isha. And he represents himself as fire and light throughout the Torah, prophets and Psalms. And fire was almost universally created by burning the wood from the tree. And that even the fire with the burning tree is symbolic of us not only being enlightened and being warmed, but also the smoke rises. Just as we would rise up to God. It is radiant energy, just as God is light. The uprights of the doorway and the lintel of the doorway, a Passover to eternal light, what was it made of?
It was wood. Well, it was wood. An Egyptian day during the pad.
Yeah. Well, of course.
Yeah.
100% of the time, all the way even...
Not stone houses, but that they put the blood on.
Yeah, wood.
The wooden frames, yeah.
Yeah, the doors and the door frames were never stone, they were wood.
Yeah, and then they always put some clay, yeah.
Yeah, always wood. Doorway was wood. Doorways are typically wood even today.
Mm-hmm.
Pesach is the upright pillar, the doorway to life. So there's a lot about wood and trees that we can learn. And, you know, it's not just Yahweh that begins. This is his first instruction to humankind. Pay attention to everything I'm saying here and the details about a tree, because they'll show you the right answer about how to draw near. They will assist you, nourish you. That's his first instruction to humankind. And so there's a lot that can be gleaned when we don't simply translate Yahweh's words, but we amplify the meaning of those words and then ponder all the potential implications of those words.
Well, you've got to have a fire also for the Passover lamb.
Yes, you do. Yeah, no fire, no Passover lamb. There will be many fires in heaven. Fire is one of the most prevalent symbols for Yahweh, for the set-apart spirit, for the initial Mikra, with the Passover fire, roasting the lamb even consumed in the fire at the end of the experience. And, you know, when you, whether it's matzah or any other form of bread, when bread is baked, what was the source of the heat?
That's always the fire. You make an oven, but there's still fire underneath.
Correct. It's always a fire. When in the ancient world, if you wanted to illuminate a home at night so that you could read, so that you could see.
Compared to the torch, yeah.
Right. You know, when occasionally I'll watch these survival shows, and there are three things in these survival shows that are essentials that it's tough even to get through one night without all three of them. Water, shelter, fire. Fire is you know, something that's essential to our survival, and 100% of the survival shows, guess what they're burning?
Whatever scrap wood they can find, or whatever they can chop down if they have some tools.
Yeah. The other thing I like about fruit trees too is that fruit trees are all of them have one thing in common. They all flower vibrant colors in the spring. They grow
the cherry tree,
leaves in the summer. Those leaves become a tapestry of color in the fall. Fall actually to re-nourish the tree, to create a carpet of color in the woods, and they are bare in the wintertime. If you live in a place like I have spent a lot of years, like Virginia, and you see the bare limbs of fruit trees with a hint of snow, with a frost, or especially a freezing rain, and the first light, one of the most beautiful sights in the world. And then to see that tree from the bare branches bud out with these, this cacophony of flowers in the spring. It's one of the most beautiful symbols of the circle of life. So there's a lot to the tree. Now, there's a lot to a word in here, although we're pursuing henna, and I've explained henna, and we're going to continue to look at henna. In this particular case, there was one henna and two ashers. And asher is, I'm not going to say it's my favorite word. I mean, my favorite word is probably bereth and maybe kara after bereth. I mean, I've got a number of favorite words. But if it were not for Asher, I would not be here.
Yeah, that's my trigger word.
Yeah, that's my trigger word. And if it hadn't been for Asher, you wouldn't be here either.
No.
I wouldn't have ever bothered to write any of these books. There would have been no yada yada, no radio shows, no introduction to God. None of it would have happened. That's not to say that there's some of you that may have found Yahweh independently, but we would not be a group. We would not be here. There would be no shows. There would be no books if it wasn't for Asher. You did a little study on Asher. We ended the last program. I think you, before we began here and came on the air, you misspoke a bit, and you said that I had asked you to investigate Asher for an extra. I actually didn't ask you. I say, you know, if you want to do something that you know is fun and it'll be pertinent for the next show, you know, you may want to consider looking at Asher. I think that was more the way that I phrased it.
It was a gentle nudge.
Yeah, it was a. This is an interesting word, and you may want to think about it. So, what did you find?
Well, to be honest with you, I found quite a lot. I pursued it the normal way through all the lexicons, and obviously we know it's a relational word, but Asher can be who, which, that, particle of relationship, a sign of a connecting link after, or something that's alike, is related to, no pun intended, to the thaw.
Yeah, no, that part of it is the part that I got initially, is the
right.
It forms an association.
Correct. Everybody
agrees. It forms a relationship. I mean, for 5 or 6 years, that's all I knew.
Mm-hmm.
But that alone was enough to get me on this journey, because the passage was in 2 Samuel 7:11, I think, is where it is. And and in that passage, it speaks of this descendant of Dode. And it says that when he sends, all of the English translation says, when he sends, they translate Asher when, he sends, I will not spare the rod. And I came to the realization, because I read maybe 10 translations, and they all said, when he sends, I said, well, if he sinned, then he is not the perfect Lamb of God. He was punished for his own failings, not mine. And that renders this whole Christian myth bogus. So I said, so one of two things is true. Either somebody changed the word, this is a poor translation of the word, or you might as well just toss the whole thing away, because you can't get, Yahweh can't get a prophecy wrong. He's not allowed.
Yeah.
Being God comes with responsibility. The responsibility is every prophecy has to be correct. So you toss the whole thing away if he sends. And so when I looked it up, the first thing I realized is what you've shared thus far. That Asher is a relational term and makes a connection between things. So if sin is associated with him, when sin is associated with him.
And quite frankly, the priest in the ceremony would place his hands on the animal that was considered perfect and put the sins of the nation on him, on that animal. So so that's being associated with, or Asher. So everything thus far is pretty status quo as you've explained it, and it goes straight. Let's see, and we had Asher, blessedness, or stuff.
Yeah, that's something. That's the second thing I learned about Asher.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I learned is that Asher is a fortuitous gift. It's a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a relational term that associates things. It's a blessing. When it's used, there's a benefit associated with it. Okay, what else did you learn?
Well, and happiness and a sense of well-being and a sense of going, and also steps. And steps are always, you know, then we get into walking the path.
Yeah, who would have thought? I mean, that was the biggest surprise to me. I didn't learn that until like a year ago.
Yeah.
That Asher is indicative of walking, of taking steps along a very certain yet restrictive, straight path.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you say, wait a minute, you know, the benefit that Yah is providing is all directly attributable to walking restrictive and correct path through the doorway of Passover right to Sukkah, camping out with God, going through each of the 7 steps along the way. And come to find out, Asher means to step along the correct path that leads to life. That was pretty profound.
Well, it narrows down the things that are... One of the things that I wasn't sure when I first read your books, Yada Yah in particular, is, like many people, I said, well, what about all these other verses? Because you would take certain things that, quite frankly, are more important to Yah than most of the mundane stuff. I don't want to say it's mundane, maybe it's poor use of words, but the things that are...
Okay, for example, mundane. What would you have thought at this first... Wouldn't you have thought, Kirk, that this first instruction in Genesis 1:27 was mundane, talking about fruit?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you say, well, that's very nice. And I understand that you need to know about a lot of things, and he's explaining how the world works and all that. But you would not have – I wouldn't have dug as deep as you just did.
All right.
So, yes, indeed. But when I went through this, now this is about two more parts of this, because this is rather interesting to me, and I hope you find it as such. But after I went through the main things related to Asher and all that you would find in most all the lexicons, then the little program I used last week, I tried that again, and it said it showed an insight to Asher. And it quotes, it says, now go to Quora 10:17. And I thought, okay, well, all right. And I had to translate it a little bit. You know, I'm not the best translator, but I think I can change the words that are most important. So let me tell you what I translated, and then I'll tell you why I think that's cool.
Okay.
This is a story about Moshe, and he's kind of mad at Aaron and his sons because he's complaining about the feast meal. And I thought, okay, we're still trying to figure out Asher, but let's go ahead and see what these guys, why they sent me there, perhaps. So when I translated, I went, why did you not eat the sin offering? The celebratory meal is the way I translated it. At this set-apart place, Kodesh, not holy, as they changed it. And the place, of course, is Mekom, which from the root word of kum, you know, stamp. And for it is...
Mekom means office where business is conducted. It means standing place to take a stand. It is also a home.
Which I associated with henna. I drew a little henna out to the side, a hay out to the side of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the home, of course, being the set-apart place. And then the rest of the verse goes for, it is Kodesh Kodesh. And, of course, set-apart is Yosha.
Correct.
Not the word Kodesh, but the set-apart. And he gave it to you, he's talking about Yahweh, to lift up, he's using NASA, Nathan and NASA, to lift up and carry away. The twisted action, I changed it from sin to the twisted actions, the dysfunctional activities from Abad and from Awan.
Awan.
Of the assembly to pay the
Awan to pervert, to corrupt, to twist.
Right.
Yep.
But also means that, and that's associated with Abad, which will mean to be destroyed or to perish. Which, I mean, you're hitting on all cylinders here.
Mm-hmm.
And then of the assembly, to pay a ransom, kafar, for them before Yahweh. So I'm looking at that, and I'm looking at that. So I look up all the words in detail.
And Kodesh paid a ransom.
Yeah. So now we've got the whole story in, you know, in Korah.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still talking about the same lamb, the Kodesh, that they have to lay the sins on.
Mm-hmm.
And their sins are being associated with him. And he's talking about how to, Moses is mad because they didn't eat it. And I think they resolved it later that they did eat it or something, but he thought they didn't eat it or something. I didn't spend a lot of time there. But and I thought, my gosh, every story is about the past. Every story is about the signpost along the way. Every story keeps going back to upright pole, standing up, being with Yah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just but every word you would think on the surface, you would never. You wouldn't even ask the word why to be in a big deal. But it's Mavua, and that's from Ma, which means why, and Yada to know.
Sure.
So why, in the sense of in order for you to know.
You're right.
Well, you know, this guy's deep. Who's writing? Inspiring this stuff.
Yes.
Then Chada from Chataf or Chataf and Chada to go wrong, to miss the path.
Right.
I thought that interesting. They all seem to
know
that means miss the path, and nobody talks about the path. Well, they talk about the wrong path.
And nobody wants to talk about wrong.
Right? Yeah.
They want to use the term sin.
Yeah.
But everybody thinks that sin is bad behavior.
Oh, it's terrible.
You know,
whatever.
Bad behavior. No, chada means wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
you're on the wrong way, like wrong path. You're just wrong.
You're just wrong. I mean, all these other paths, like just because all these other paths are going somewhere, they ain't going where Yahweh's going. There's only one path. So we've got a singular path, no matter which way you look at it, and it's the straight path. It's the straight stick. It's the upright pole. It's the you know, it just goes on and on and on and on of where you look at. So I don't know if they meant for me to find that much stuff, when they put it down, when they said, here, this is associated with this particular word.
Yeah,
but it turned out.
There.
Yeah,
that's
and
why
it was
there.
Just, I thought that was really exciting just to, I'm not, like I say, I'm not like you and JB, but I can't miss what's there. The head of the assembly is the company assembled together by an appointment.
We're no better than you are. It's, you're doing
more than Nick Raven.
When you, you know, when you garner insights and make connections to understand from a translation, then you're doing it at the highest possible level.
Well, it's as deep as I can go, but it's still, that's what he asked you to do, and it's really satisfying to know that all that's in there.
Yeah, you know, once
I mean,
a week, I'll get an email from somebody that says, do you have just a list of the passages that you've translated, particularly of the Torah? And I always say no. I have no interest in producing one. I have no interest in just doing the translations, because the translations are the work. The insights are the reward.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the benefit. The reward for what you just did,
the
insights that you could garner from it, the understanding you could garner from it, that's the benefit. The translation itself is work. The benefit is what you glean from it. And so when I share, like write these books, we do these shows, I'd much rather share the insights, because that's where the benefit is.
Yeah. The words could I won't say they'd be cold, but you miss all the if you didn't do it the way you do it in the sense of amplifying each word, gosh, you miss a ton.
You do.
Now I know it reads hard if you do that, but you can read the words and then go back and read the amplifications. But my gosh, there's so much in the amplifications. And it's all
the amplifications provide the insights. It's like using a microscope to look at the tiny forms of life by amplifying this, magnifying it. You find things that are interesting that you would not have known before. But there's another reason for amplification, and that is that I know for certain that I'm not qualified to determine what aspects of a word like Asher Yah intended to use and did not intend to use. And so for me to say, all right, there are 20 aspects of Asher that are pertinent here, and to choose just one of them, who am I to reduce what Yahweh had to say to a single thought, when he may, in fact, have decided to convey all of those? So with amplification, you almost have to say, I can't promise you that every one of these ideas was intended by Yahweh. But I think you should. But I think I owe it to myself and to you, and particularly to him, to convey everything that it could mean in this context, because he may have intended all of it.
Yeah,
and my thinking typically is he typically did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not done. I've got some more for you too.
Okay,
so if you want to explore a little bit more, okay.
Please.
Then I started looking at the ancient Hebrew letters, and I think I could. Of course, Asher was a Aleph and the Shin and the Rosh. Of course, that's a ram's head and then some teeth. And the head, or the top, but a head, the image of a head. And they're pointing, all heading in the left direction, which is fine, because they're all associated. You could say that, okay, this is symbol of Yahweh and nourishing words for the observing person.
Yeah, by the way, they're all looking to the left, just like Yahweh's hand is reaching to the left.
Right.
Which way does Hebrew read, Kirk?
Hebrew is right from right to left, so we're all going in the right direction.
If a letter faces the right, faces the left, like Yahweh's hand, it's facing forward, then, isn't it?
Yeah. So
if the person is looking to the left, they're looking forward in terms of what's going to come next in the sentence and what God is saying next. So in Asher, all the letters are looking forward. You know, when Yahweh tells us to turn around, you know, to shub, to change direction. It's because we went from, humankind went from walking towards Him to walking backwards in a counterproductive manner. Religion takes us away from God, backwards. And so the fact that all of those symbols look forward determines why Asher is universally positive in its nature. You know, it speaks of walking the straight path forward to an abundant life, to the benefits of the relationship. So that's not a small thing that all of the characters point to the left. They're all looking forward.
You know, you could also use just, we're just extrapolating from the letters, so I got into the meanings. But you could also say the connection, the Asher part, the star part that connects man with Yahweh is the nourishing words. Without that,
yeah, that's exactly right. That's
why it's between
us. Perfect. That's the word is written with three letters. The first letter, the LF, is the principal letter to symbolize Yahweh. He is the leader of the flock. He is the Passover lamb. He is El God, which is the Aleph Lambda, the shepherd's staff. He is Ab Father, which is Aleph Bayath, which is the ram's head and the home. So Aleph, that is symbolic of God our Father. The Shin is nourishing words. It's teeth. It conveys words which are nourishing. And then the Rosh is the individual looking at, paying attention to, the nourishing words of God.
Yes.
And the nourishing words of God, when we observe them, provide the proper path to the benefits of the relationship. Asher.
Yeah, pretty powerful stuff. And
it almost gets to the point where you say, all right.
All right, I got it. Yeah, well, we obviously talked.
Okay, come on. Now you're showing off.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. You're showing off now. Yeah, here's an extraordinarily common and important word, and that's how it was written. It's, by the way, is he showing off by it? Yeah. Yes.
No. Well,
he's in a positive way.
Himself. Let's say that.
What is the purpose of observing if somebody's not showing?
Yeah, that's true.
It's God's responsibility to show. Our responsibility to observe.
Yeah.
With Asher, he's showing.
Yeah.
What you've done is observe it.
Yeah, and if you're teaching, you have to hit. Just like I fell in love with this more because of Yahweh's name to start with, and Asher was your hook, and I've talked to Alpha and asked people that are in the family, what was it that first grabbed you? You know, is why he's got it all over the place in so many different forms. I mean, to make an understatement, he's the best teacher in the world.
You know what the most interesting, the most profound use of Asher is in the whole Torah, Prophets, and Psalms?
Tell me.
Ihaya, Asher, Ihaya. Uh-huh. When Moshe said, who am I to tell the children of Israel has sent me? Yahweh said, I am who I am. Ihaya, I am, I exist, Asher. Providing the benefits of the relationship, the proper steps to life. I am the means to existence, having provided the proper path, the straight means to step towards all of the benefits of the relationship. And that's why I exist. Ihaya, Asher, Ihaya. That's a pretty profound use of Asher.
That's pretty profound, yeah. And in the context there, even more, yeah.
Yeah, it's set between two Hayas. Both Hayas were written, ascribed in first person. That's why it's Ihaya.
Uh-huh. Ihaya, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, This is some cool stuff coming up, I think.
Yeah, I hope you feel this way. I hope somebody else feels this way.
The nature of this program is that we gather on the Shabbat to share insights from Yahweh's testimony that we think will have benefits to the family. And, you know, I came to the conclusion a long time ago that if I thought something was really interesting, the chances are almost everybody else that's part of the family is going to think it's interesting. We share a common thirst and interest in this regard. If you thought it was interesting, we're going to think it's interesting.
Well, having said that, I will continue on with another Asher.
Okay.
These are older, going back to more ancient understandings of what they thought of earlier, not modern Hebrews or modern rabbinical periods. But enjoying well-being and contentment. From that lexicon, one who is happy is one whose life is lived straightly, to be blessed and to be led.
But all of those are still related to the foundational definitions we've already shared.
Right. So even in olden days, they would have thought the same thing.
On them, for example, to being led is slightly different than in stepping along the proper path that leads to the benefits of the relationship. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the primary definition. Being led goes right to the graphic spelling of the name.
Mm-hmm.
The words of Yahweh are nourishing to those who observe them. So it's the words of Yahweh, and Yahweh as the lamb, the head of the flock, leading us to the benefits of the relationship. So it's being led is an extrapolation. It's implied.
Mm-hmm.
And as you have now discovered, it's not just implied. It was originally intended as part of its meaning.
Sure. In addition, one we just also goes back way back to the one we were talking about a minute ago, happy feelings of joy, well-being, satisfaction.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we were having this long discussion by email with the gay atheist that came across as bright and well connected, and I engaged him because I realized that he had chosen to believe that there was no God because he had figured out that religion was false. Now, he came to hate religion and thus the notion of God because the religious are almost universally anti-homosexuality and homosexuality defined his existence. So it was simply a knee-jerk reaction to, I celebrate the fact I'm homosexual and the religious are homophobes, and therefore religions must be false. No, religions are false, and the God of religions must be false. So that's where he was. But as we began to engage, what we found is that this individual could never, ever make that necessary connection to let go of prior misconceptions and just examine the evidence on its own merits, and to actually consider, even be open-minded to the possibility that God is more opposed to religion than he is, and that the God of religion is a false God, but that a real God can be proven, wasn't remotely capable of even processing that information.
It really appeared like it wasn't even interesting to him. Some people find comfort in what they're against.
It's just like a Christian.
They left their point of view and they decided that's the way, and
right.
Don't mess
it's
with
like
them.
The Christian that I was from Coast to Coast that I was writing. His Christian beliefs defined him.
Yes.
So he was going to justify them even when I proved every single statement. I absolutely destroyed.
Wiped out, yeah.
Wiped out, obliterated every single statement that he made. I had copious arguments that were irrefutable, that obliterated everything he said. So showing that the opposite of what he claimed to be true was actually accurate. and the religious person was not capable of even processing it, responding to it, recognizing, you know, I have heard him one time say, what's wrong with you? Why can't you admit that you were wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it about you that's incapable of doing that? And that was the same thing with the gay atheist. We tried to reach him, but was incapable of even fathoming the possibility that that which defined him could be wrong. That's why Yahweh says the Torah is easy to understand. Well, he qualifies that for those who are open-minded.
Isn't it interesting on that word, you know, about we're talking about satisfaction? Isn't it interesting that Yahweh had already said that the people who, they're talking about Paul's folks, they'll find no satisfaction in this?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought up satisfaction again, because that was actually the reason I went to talk about this, because what we found out was that this fellow's really unsatisfied with life. You know, he had a lover that died back almost a decade ago, and he's really unable to get past it. And he's constantly trying to lay out proof that he's important. And everybody in the family that responded to him,
mm-hmm.
we're content. We're satisfied. We're not trying to sell anything.
No.
But our knowledge of Yahweh is comfortable. Our relationship with him is satisfying. It satisfies our intellect. It's the truth is so very comforting, satisfying. It's the antithesis of the fear of God. The knowledge of God brings contentment and satisfaction. I'm extraordinarily comfortable in with what he has had to say. So that contentment idea just radiates out of the family. By the way, one of the things that's interesting too is that when you're really content in that relationship, there is no reason to belittle an individual. For example, the two people that, you know, one because of atheism and homosexuality, the other because of the Christian religion that I was exchanging views with, you know, never went into a position of belittling them, although both of them tried to attack me. Which you just say, you know, here's the truth. Let's keep this argument to the issues. There's no reason ever to use the ad hominem argument. Just keep it to the facts. Now, I personally don't think it's belittling to say, you know, why is it that you're incapable, proven wrong, to admit that you're wrong?
Well, that's a valid question when you're talking with somebody. What is it that you don't get?
Yeah. You know,
I mean,
now
what am I
you know for
wrong
certain
you don't
that what you have
what
said is wrong, why is it that you're unwilling to correct what you believed and admit that you were wrong?
If you're absolutely sure that you're right and he's wrong, then why won't you engage in a debate where you actually bring in some facts? Show me where.
Right.
I mean, I think you did say that, but regardless, that's the appropriate response. I mean, it was, okay, convince me.
Yeah. If you think that there's that something that my translations or conclusions and yada yada or introduction to God or questioning Paul are invalid, and you can quote Yahweh from the oldest source, properly translated, in context, and demonstrate that my translation is wrong or my conclusions are wrong, bring it on. You know, we'll have a debate then, and I'm not even suggesting that the debate would end. I told him, I said, you know, it could be that you're right and I will say I was wrong. It could be that I'm right and you'll admit that you were wrong, or it could be that we're both right or we're both wrong. But that is the evidence that needs to be brought to bear if you think a different case can be made of this individual. All he did is he gave up and sent me a link to an article that was supposedly written by Martin Luther King on the humanity and divinity of Jesus. Great.
Hmm. Okay.
It just makes you want to cry. Excuse me. The best you can do.
That's it, huh?
We're going to continue this discussion by bringing in an article written by a dead man.
No,
you know, I can tell you there's a difference between Martin Luther King and myself. Now, first of all, Martin Luther King was a lot of differences. He was religious, and I'm not. He was political, and I'm not. Which means he could not be part of the covenant, and I am. But the biggest difference, if you will, between us is that I love the Torah, love Yahweh's name. All I care about is what did Yahweh say? What can I learn from Yahweh's testimony? That was not his agenda. You know, he spoke from a religious and political agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I'm unaware of wherever he said anything that would be profound as an analysis of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Now, we're just opposites.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a... Well, he, you know, like all of us, we pretty well. He chose to go the religious, political approach.
Right. I don't have a problem with him. Yeah. You know, some of the things he said are profoundly valuable. You know, when are we going to judge people not by the color of their skin, but the content of their character?
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Absolutely true. Brilliant. Appropriate. But. You know, to quote Martin Luther King is somebody who believed that Paul told the truth because that article is essentially Pauline doctrine. That God is both human, that Jesus was both human and divine. It's just really sad.
Yeah.
All right, so contentment is one of the things
that confirms some of the ones we've just talked about and throw a little bit of a wrinkle, I think, on a couple others. So,
okay.
Asher Ra, which has the hay on end of it, henna, as it was originally called, but the hay was making it feminine. And that means a grove, which is an area of planted trees in a row, as in straight lines. And it's a nice little tree reference while we're talking about trees.
Right. Zion, the signpost along the way, mm-hmm. that would be the trees planted in a straight line, all conveying this is the way to Yahweh.
Yeah. And of course, the original, the first most obvious thing that people translate about Asher would be which or who or what, that, or words that link the action in a sentence to the one doing the action, as understood as a rope attaches two objects together. So the association once again. There is Asher with a raw between the shin and the rosh. And that is a walking, that means to step, walking in a straight line or a straight path or the way. And of course, they were called the followers of the way. And that's, so I thought that rather interesting as well. So confirmation once again.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have another tree reference. Teshua is with a upright pole or a paw, then Asher. Only with the wall between, once again, between the shaw and the, the shin rather, and the rosh. And Teshor is an unknown tree. Perhaps it says a bark strip to use to make cords, which is interesting if the original meaning is to a cord pull tight or objects.
So a little bit of insight there. And then,
is the way we learn. We make connections between things, dot to dots. You tie those two dots together, and if you tie enough of the dots together, a picture forms.
That's right. And then I went to the root word, which is just sure, or shar, S-H-R, the shin and the rosh, and it just simply means to tie a cord. Like it also means an umbilical cord, where the mother is connected to the child.
Right.
Straight. Relative, a relationship there. A caravan. Prosperity and happiness in an abstract form. Now, the overall meaning, if I can put in a few words, the ropes and cords are made of bark strips and sinew, tendons, of animals. Rope is made by twisting two fibers together, two fibers attached to a fixed point. One is tied clockwise, and the other one is counterclockwise and repeated throughout the rope. And then the fibers lock or press together, making the rope stronger. So the two together, the aleph and the rosh together, makes the relationship stronger. Rope is
God and man, God and man together.
Together, right.
Right. It's a stronger relationship when God and man are together than when man and God are apart. That's why 6 + 1 = 7. 7 is the idea of perfection. But God plus man is the ideal result. So God and man together.
Yeah. So, but in the context of these type of definitions, they're more talking to the Hebrews or the Yehudim that were more, in the language frame rather, was more concrete. So unlike the English or the Greek and so forth, where we're always thinking more abstractly, to them, this is what this is. So it was thought of in those terms. The rope is used to secure something or to support something or someone. With the shin or the teeth, it can be pressure, it can be words, it can be nourishment, it can be language. The resh, it can be a head of a man, a top, a beginning. Press, the beginning, or nourishment for man, relationship
right.
with y'all. And then you have shurim, which is the shin, rather, the roach and the nun, which is wall armor around the family, and also can be words. And that is our armor. You know, the Torah is words.
Yes.
Always the Torah.
Yeah. Yes.
And then,
I was going to say one of the things that separate Martin Luther King from myself, where you're thinking about armor here. King had a few death threats and he was ultimately shot.
Yes.
I've had thousands upon thousands of them. Never ducked. Never been shot. When you're about Yahweh's business, not man's business, Yahweh sends his Malach in accordance with the 91st Mizmor Psalm to protect those who are about his business. Martin Luther King was shot. He was not protected by Yahweh.
No.
That's a significant difference. It's very hard to be an effective messenger for Yahweh if you're dead. So there's a reason why Yahweh protects those who are conveying his message. We're much more effective alive. And there are not a lot of us.
No, that's true. And that's a shame, but that's true.
Yeah. But well, for a lot of years, I mean, that was the most amazing thing. You read Yahshayahu, I read it not too long ago from beginning to end. And God is constantly saying, I looked, I could find no one. No one. Through the chasms of time, I could find no one. And, I think that, Kirk, even in finding us as a covenant family, he had to go out of his way to facilitate his introduction to us. We would not have found him on our own. Not a chance.
No. Well, I'm comforted to know that he ran across Moshe. Wasn't exactly looking for him.
Abraham wasn't looking for him, was he?
And David wasn't either.
No, David wasn't. He's out tending the sheep. Yirmiyah was not looking for him. Yashiyah was not looking for him. Oh, Yahweh, it's just like you saw Terry and I think it was at a sorority event that you were had been invited to and were attended. If you had not ultimately decided to go up to her and offered her,
that was a birthday. Right, that was a birthday party. I was drawing her by the picture.
Okay, yeah. If you had not engaged her in conversation, you wouldn't be married to her.
No.
If Yahweh hadn't engaged us in conversation, gone up to us and said, you know, let's begin a conversation, we wouldn't know it.
No. That's where Abraham started. I mean, it's you know, he had walked away enough, and he was halfway home, and then he said, and he didn't say much to him then, but he said,
in a loving relationship, in a loving relationship, is entirely appropriate for a person to walk up, for Yahweh to say, I kind of like that person. I want to introduce myself.
Yeah.
Totally appropriate. Just like it was totally appropriate for you to say, you know, I think that she's nice. I just like the way she acts and carries herself and start talking to her. I like the way she talks and responds. It's totally appropriate for you to prioritize your relationship with her over other relationships. That's the nature of relationships. We choose the relationships we want to be part of.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yahweh has exactly the same prerogative. And does.
Yeah.
But well, you know, part of it though is it's not as random as you might think though.
Yeah.
You know, like for example, Moshe had some experiences that Yah knew he could capitalize on.
Yeah.
He was well educated. He was literate. He had insight, working knowledge of Egypt, Mitzrayim, and he was in opposition.
Right man for the right job at the right time. Absolutely.
Yeah. He was in opposition to the way that his people were being treated. I was willing to stand up, take a stand against that. And so there are some characteristics that Yahweh would like. He saw Abraham walking away from Ur of the Chaldeans, of Ur, the city of became first Babylon. But Ur, he was walking away. And so he saw a man doing what was essential to forming a relationship with him. So, you know, it's not like Yahweh is going to go to the Vatican and see if I can find somebody there. It's not like he's going to go to Mecca and see if I can find somebody there. It's not like he's going to go to Washington, D.C. and say, gee, I wonder if I can find somebody here.
No, there's got to be somebody in the Senate, right?
It's not like he picked a Roman. You know, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
He picks people that he thinks, that there is a reasonable likelihood that they're going to respond to the invitation. A Roman's not going to do that. A Roman Catholic is not going to do that. A Muslim's not going to do it. There's no reason to provide an introduction because there's no chance of a response. Now, in my particular case, it's probably true for you as well. I am disappointed, but yet a beneficiary of the fact that Yah's chosen people have failed to respond. That's not all of them. I mean, we have many Yehudim and Israelites who are part of the covenant family. But for the most part, Israel has rejected Yahweh. And so, I can tell you for certain that he would have preferred to work with two Israelites than Goyim.
Yeah.
And so the fact that there were no Israelites that were willing gave us an opportunity. And I think that once we've accepted this opportunity, once we're part of the covenant, we're grafted in. We're viewed by Yah as the same as Yisrael. So I don't think it's a negative, but
But he would have loved. I mean,
he would have much. He would have been. If your background and my background and others who have been essential to conveying his message had been Yehudim, it would have pleased Yahweh.
Yeah.
Now that said, I still think that he has gotten tremendous joy out of our feeble, flawed, and yet
attempts.
Committed, passionate attempt to understand who he is and what he had to say.
Yeah. Well, we do take his word serious.
We do. We do. We have fun with the relationship. We have. So yeah. I'm certain we've brought him pleasure. And if we're nothing more than a couple of dirty, dented implements
mm-hmm.
that Yahweh used to ultimately bring his family home,
yeah.
That's a pretty good use of a life.
Yeah. Have you got a better one?
Yeah. No. What, you know, would you rather be the family that comes home, or would you rather be one of the implements Yahweh used to bring his family home?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I think being an implement, being
pretty
a tool, being used, I think pretty. Terrific opportunity.
Yeah. Seize today.
Yes. Yeah, carpe diem, huh? We're going to go to Latin on me, huh? All right.
Well,
what else did you learn about it?
I went through all the grammatical thing. I could go 5 more pages on the grammar stuff on every instance, but that was fine. You know, we already know that enough to do it per verse. But it was interesting. For some reason, I was flipping through some notes, and there was Yesher sitting there. And I said, Yeshar. And I'm going,
Yeshar, yeah.
Oh, wait. There's Rosh, and we have Yah's hand reaching back. So I'm saying, let me go look that up. So rather than go to bed at a timely hour. So I got, that is a tight rope is straight. An upright or right one is one who is straight. I interjected that we say, a straight shooter. That's a normal term.
Yeah, to be Yasher is to be right.
Yeah.
And to be Yasher is to be right. To be a straight shooter, to be upright, if you were to boil it down to Yasher to a single word, the concept anyway, is to be right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the moment you mentioned Yasher, it's just, that brings a big smile on my face. One of my favorite words, to be right.
Yeah.
And to be straight. You know, it's not just to be. You know, there's this. It's a combination of straightforward and right,
mm-hmm.
which means you're. It's not just that your conclusion is correct, but the means, the path that you followed to that conclusion, the evidence and the reason that you deployed to reach that conclusion are straightforward.
Yeah.
So it's a right. Yasher is right from the perspective of coming to the conclusion in a rational and appropriate, straightforward manner, and then conveying what you have come to understand is correct in a straightforward manner.
All right.
Yasher is a really good word.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, Yasher is a really good word. And the only difference between Yasher and Asher is Yahweh.
So it's a Yod.
Yeah.
But further, and it also firmly holds up the truth, just as a cord is straight and firmly holds up the walls of the tent, the family home.
Right.
Upright.
Mm-hmm.
Holds the tent upright. It's a straight line. It's a straight path, once again, the walk in the path, the sign of the way, and or a straight thought, keeping your thoughts straight.
A straight thought, right.
Yeah.
A reasonable way to evaluate the evidence, to come to a correct conclusion, and then convey the insight in a straightforward manner.
Yes, sir. All in one little word. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, that's a word of words, though.
Yeah.
You know, we wonder, forgive me if I sound self-centered here. It wasn't the idea is that when it comes to a relationship with Yahweh, they are all one-on-one. And Yahweh absolutely, for a relationship with a single individual, would create a word that is this meaningful. Now, he's not restricting it to one individual. You know, I gained from it. Now you've gained from it. Now all of our listeners have gained from it. But, you know, you wonder, is this word, with all of its profound meaning that provides insights into who Yahweh is, what he's offering, and what he expects in return, how to approach him, was it specifically used in that specific place? Because he knew?
Mm-hmm.
3,000 years after he used it, that we would figure it out, and as a result of figuring it out, come to know him? Was it put there for that purpose?
Possibly. I wondered about the little translation I did, because it was so close to your experience on acknowledging that, once again, that same story of Yahusha being associated with sin, and Moshe talking about that very event in a different context, yes, but in a different circumstance, not context, but a different circumstance, the same context, and how valuable it was, and why he was so upset that they got it right, because he's trying to tell the story right, and that's the very story that bothered you, because he told the story wrong.
Correct. I was Moshe.
When I was reading that,
such an important story. Yeah.
You got it like this, though. Man, this is like confirming. This is Moshe confirming that Dead Gummy get the story right, because this is important.
Get this story right.
I think it may have been lying there for 3,000 years just for you, pal.
Yeah, I do. And by the way, when I say I think it was laid out 3,000 years ago for me, it means it was laid out there 3,000 years ago for you. And everyone listening to this program tonight, and whoever's going to listen to the archives, it was laid out there 3,000 years ago for you.
Yeah. All I got to do is pick it up. But, I mean, you know, it's going to take some work, Interesting.
Yeah, and one of the things that is so marvelous about Yahweh is that you could have embarked on this. Here I am telling you, because I have, it's hard to imagine amplifying expanding the meaning of Asher any more than I have. And I'm out there further probably than anybody in human history has ever been with this word when conveying the word of Yahweh. And I give you a suggestion. I say, hey, you know, we got a week between the next show. You may want to consider looking at Asher. If I was not content in my relationship with Yahweh, if I didn't find his teaching satisfying, if there wasn't a conviction about knowing him, if there wasn't a sense that everything he says reinforces the truth, this one word that formed my relationship with him, do you think I would have risked the possibility that you come on this program and you say, no, you know, everything you've said is mostly wrong. It's not the conclusion I came to at all. That would be threatening.
Yeah, but I would never do that. I would say, this is what I don't understand, because I came up with this and that this. I mean, that was just, then we'd do the debate.
I would want you to.
In order that I find out what those,
if I was wrong, I would want you to be confronting.
Well,
but that's
the
reason we have contentment is that everything Yahweh says, he confirms.
Yeah.
I knew that if you studied Asher, rather than find that what I had learned was untrue, you would learn even more and reinforce and expand on my knowledge and our knowledge of this marvelous word. That's just the way Yahweh works. He is consistent. Everything, if you look at that story, I mean, there's Moshe having an argument with Aaron and his sons.
And his sons, yeah.
And you just go, okay, I don't want to hear about the argument. Come on, squabble, squabble. And there you have Yahusha serving as the ransom, as the offering for having missed the way. And Moshe is saying, you know, this is important. Why did did you get it wrong? And you find that, well, that was profound.
Yeah.
You know, it's you can be very comfortable when you tell somebody, you know, what I want you to do is verify my translations.
Yeah.
Go check them yourself. You know, if
you
find something wrong, yeah.
You use a lot of the same stuff I use, and I use some stuff that you don't use. And just because I didn't want to spend that much money on those things, but you know, it's initially. And I spent a lot on bulk and stuff. I mean, not a lot, but, you know, money. And I said to myself, you know, I'd like to go online for people who don't have any money to do this or strapped to do this. Where can I find online? And will it take me somewhere else? And now, the only difference is I've read enough and studied enough to know that what is wrong is really wrong. You know, whether it's Yahweh's name or keywords. So I do have that filter that you talk about all the time.
When you have
absolutely
to go online.
No colors set apart and not holy and things like that. So
right.
You're not going to get any of those.
Correct. You have to use your filter if you go online.
But I use a lot of the same sources that so many people use. And I say, but look right here. It's still... This is what this means. Now let's change it back to what it really means. And what actually it says in the lectionary, it says it right there. There's the word. Let's look up the word. And I'll spend hours looking up the words. And and all of a sudden, so you that's all you can draw from it. It has to be that.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter that I may not have every book that you have, or vice versa.
Yeah. The difference is that while we're both analog individuals.
Mm-hmm.
You are wholly analog.
Oh, I'm terrible.
And I am analog, trying to embrace a digital set of tools. And so, while I have hundreds and hundreds of books, almost all of the things that I use now are electronic in terms of tools. I enter link things, and I'm constantly, if I'm studying something and I have an idea and I want to make a connection, I will Google it.
Yeah.
And
there's nothing wrong with that. I use some stuff online now too. I'm not just because of the speed, and then I can check that. Then I get out the hardbacks and just make sure I'm not missing anything, and you know, something like that. But I use
Logos, the digital tool that where I'll bring out. I'll have two interlinears open, and then I'll go through and I'll read the words one word at a time, and I've just made a habit that even if I've seen a word 10,000 times, I'll still do it again, and because sometimes you find something that's new. You know, Kara was one of those things. Asher was another word like that. Henna is a word like that. You just find things that are new, and you don't want to get lazy in your learning.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this passage on what is it about trees. I had never, the things that we talked about in terms of trees, this is from that passage is in the 9th chapter of Observations. There isn't a single word about any of that there.
No,
I was just reading it this evening, preparing for the program. And I said, you know what, we really got to talk about here. I mean, I was thinking a big deal about the importance of trees telling us how to approach him. Why did he? And then it's all of a sudden it says, oh my, oh my.
Oh, let's think about
it. Yeah, and so that's
but
how you learn.
Didn't you have the same experience when you said, let's think about ants?
Oh, I know, exactly the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Say, well, let's analyze ants. Then you went over and Googled ants and everything in the world about ants, well, more than most of us would. And then you said, oh, look.
Yeah.
And then there's another 20
pages.
For example,
I had no idea that, you know, virtually all ants were female.
Yeah.
And all the ants that you see are always female.
Yeah, the bees are mostly female, except for the drones.
You know,
we always think of the others.
Right. You always think of the queen, and the term that we use, queen. And so you think that that's the ruler of the nest or the hive. But no,
they're all independent workers.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the queen has probably the fewest rights of all.
Yeah, she's stuck.
So they clip her wings, man. She never gets to leave. That's a miserable existence. the queen has, but Yahweh's whole, there's no hierarchy. You know, they're industrious. They work together without hierarchy. You know, and as he was saying, that's what I'm trying to explain here, is that the one of the reasons I'm opposed to human religious and political schemes is they all have a hierarchy. And I don't want you to have a hierarchy. I want you to come directly to me, not through somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this idea of layman to priest to bishop to archbishop to cardinal to pope. The purpose of the ant story is to tell you, don't do that. The military, where you've got up through the ranks with six enlisted ranks and six officer ranks, don't do that. What God said, just don't do that. No, I don't like hierarchies. You know, it's, I'm dad, you're my children,
mm-hmm.
and there is no hierarchy in all of that. Do I have some favorite children? Yes, my prerogative, those are my favorite. But there's no hierarchy in it. So,
works for me.
Yeah, it works, but... well, we have, it's my opinion, Kirk, that the tools we have available to us to understand who Yahweh is and what he's saying are greater than at any time in human history, including the time during the Exodus, including during when Moshe was revealing the Torah and Yahweh was speaking directly to the people, including the time of Dode when he was writing these marvelous songs in Israel. I don't think there's any time in human history, including even when Adam and Yahweh had a one-on-one relationship. I don't think there's any moment in time where God's creation has been given a better opportunity to know who Yahweh is and what he said, what he's offering and what he wants in return, than what we have right here and now. And I think one of the reasons that we have these marvelous tools, and they're communication tools through the Internet, research tools through the Internet, and all of these interlinears and lexicons and dictionaries and now having the Dead Sea Scrolls available to us, the reason we have this is that Yahweh has a single means of conveying who he is to his people, his word. And we have these marvelous tools to understand what he had to say, because this is the time that his people, Israel, need to listen to him and come back home. And so we've been given these marvelous tools at this time for that particular purpose.
Yeah, I have no argument with that at all. That's absolutely agreed.
You know, so many people say, you know, when God shows up, I'll deal with it then. No.
He's been sitting on the shelf the whole time.
There he is. He's right there.
Yeah.
Get to know him. You have no excuse. It's easy. If you're open-minded, if you're willing to observe that his Torah, his prophets, his Mizmor, Psalms, he's right there. He proves his existence. He proves the inspiration of these words. And you can take a single word, Asher, and turn it into life lessons about who God is, what he's offering, and what he expects from us. How we approach him, it's all in Asher.
Yeah.
He can have a metaphor of a tree, and you can come to know exactly why it's important to reach up to the light, to be firmly rooted in the land and the foundation that is the Torah.
And nourished by the water of the set apart spirit. I mean,
correct.
Come on, this is good stuff.
It's all there for us. He makes himself so abundantly clear, so available, so approachable. And we have no excuse. And it's beyond that, though, Kirk. So you ended up with 20-some-odd pages of notes on a single word, Asher. Was there any part of it that was before you said?
I could put that if I put all the grammar stuff in, sir. I could have at least gone to 10 or 12, but...
Was there any part of it you said, boy, this is really laborious?
No, I mean, it's tiring because I usually do it later because it's cooler, but or if I'm working during the day, but it certainly was not... It was when you hit one and then you go, oh, wow, wow. It's more like the, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Wow. Isn't it?
Yeah,
now,
I'm sure there's many times where you,
why am I leaving this?
This is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you look at it and you say, now, what is it? Oh, wow. And then it's one of them like Macomb, you know, and then you go to Macomb and stand up and, you know, and place
right.
And a standing. Then you find it means a standing place. And you rise and stand up and stand
yeah.
Well, and it's not.
Can I
mean, that's good
for it
stuff.
Because Macomb is one of my favorite words, too.
Yeah.
It's Macomb.
Uh-huh.
Remember Ma? You looked up. It's Ma is the interrogatory. It means why or what. And
mm-hmm.
It's predicated on yada. Why? Well, it's because to know. And so Macum is to know why this is the place to take a stand. To know why this is the home for the upright. That's really the full amplified meaning of Macum. It's Macum.
Yeah, I'm writing this down. That's good stuff.
No, everything is like that.
Now,
it's one of the reasons why I think for 1,000 years.
I know. I'm running out of
room. Likely.
They don't stop.
Yeah, I think for 1,000 years, Kirk, I think we're likely to have two Torahs. I think that the existing Torah is going to be scribed in us for the 1,000 years that we're celebrating the millennial Shabbat. Because there's so many things like this, you know, it's like, hey, you know, that's pretty neat. We just figured out Macomb. We just figured out about the trees. We figured out about Asher. We figured out about Henna. There's that, and we're pretty excited about what we learned. Well, by comparison to having a perfect copy of the Torah, that having perfect understanding of Hebrew, in Yahweh's presence. We're going to be able to look at the existing Torah and be amazed by how much we learn and the insights
mm-hmm.
that are available to us. So I do think that we're going to have that. I also think we have to have a Torah, lowercase t, not for the mortals who are during the millennial Shabbat, but for those of us who are immortal, who have been harvested prior to the tribulation, I think that we have to have a Torah lowercase t because we need to know how to operate in 4, 5, 6, and 7 dimensions.
Yeah, that's going to be a trip.
There's got to be some instructions that are going to go along.
There's a pile up on the 6
dimensions.
Oh, man. Oh, Roy, get us out of this.
Right, yeah. Even if we had Roy along with us, I'm still looking.
Ain't enough.
He's a smart guy. I love him. But I really want some very thorough instructions.
I want the manual.
If you want to go across the known universe and travel to another solar system, you may want to keep this in mind. Or here, let me give you a map because. Not every galaxy has planets that are interesting. And some of them have got some really, really nasty stuff. So here's a map. You may want to start. Here's the easy things.
Skip that one.
I want to skip that one over there. You know, I want some instructions. But I also want, for 1,000 years, to celebrate the existing Torah and to learn all of the Macums and Ashers and Hennas and Yashers.
Yeah.
Along the way.
Yeah. Well, we had more energy and more time.
Yeah.
But we will. But we will.
Yeah, we will. We will.
You know, one of the comments that one of your emailers was talking about the language and everything, and I got to think about it. You know, as poor as I command as I have the English language, I must say that the good news is I've only got about 11 more years I got to use it. And then I'll be speaking proper Hebrew. So what the heck? So I always
right.
put a lot of emphasis on the language we're using. This is
all
we can use. Because we all speak it, but But the Herald had ordered to talk about this. Okay, because this is Greek, we can use Greek. And I don't want to use Greek. I'm going to get out of this English language one of these days pretty soon. But
yeah, I don't want to use Greek either. And while English is my native tongue, I sure like Hebrew a lot better.
Yeah, what a great language.
Yeah, it was a marvelous language. I love the... I'm one of the few people, and maybe there's more. I mean, I'm sure there are more, who actually loves Hebrew grammar.
Mm-hmm.
I love the stems and the conjugations and the moods, infinitive constructs and the whole of it. You know, verbal adjectives and it's just the whole nature of the language appeals to me. I like the female and male aspects, masculine and feminine aspects of it. I like it's eternally true. It's like light, the no past, present, and future. It's just, how his testimony is.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding how light and time enable prophecies not to be predictions of the future, but instead future history.
Yeah.
It's...
Now, on your programs, when you're translating on your program, and it, mm-hmm. does it give you the grammar when you're looking that up on, say, something like Logos? Or do you say with me, I have to go to a whole bunch of places to find out this was said, and this is in the qual?
I set up my page on Logos such that along the left side, I have an interlinear that lists each word, and if it is and that word is linked to, I think, 12 of 12 electronic dictionaries, and if it's a verb, it will list the verb. It will tell me if the verb is possessive. It'll tell me if the verb is or the noun is possessive, I should say. But if the verb is imperfect or perfect, it'll tell me if it was ascribed a stem and what stem it was, if it was ascribed a mood, if it was an infinitive construct, verbal adjectives, for example. So it will list the various attributes of that verb. Now, all of those attributes are conveyed by prefixes and suffixes. It will also say, was this first person, second person, third person, feminine, masculine, singular, or plural. And conjunctions and the prepositions in Hebrew are all ascribed to the words. They're not separate in Hebrew. And so the interlinears I use will, if you put them on the right setting, will actually break the conjunctions and the like away from the words, so that you can look at the word itself and then know the conjunctions or prepositions or articles that may have been attached to it. So yes, I have not only the tool that tells me this was written in the Hiphil, perfect cohortative, for example, stem, conjugation, and mood. And if it was scribed first, second, or third person, masculine, feminine, singular, or plural,
mm-hmm.
I can click on the Hiphil, for example, and it will take me to a Hebrew grammar book that will explain, the Hiphil is used to for the subject to engage the object in such a way that the object experiences the action of the verb as a secondary subject, is what it will tell me about the Hiphil.
Okay. See, that takes me a long time. First of all, I got to figure out what it is in a Hivel, and then I can go to my church and I do that. But that takes me a long, long time to do that. So I kind of
That's why I like that's why I like the Logos. I don't recommend Logos anymore because it's gotten way, way, way Christian religious.
Christian.
Yeah. So it's and you know, a huge percentage of what I look up. I used to have to use the religious filter to get rid of the religious mumbo jumbo, but that's an essential element of translating and using the tools is having your religious filter.
I'm going to have to find some. If you run across something that has some kind of program that you can buy separately or something like that, that would be cool.
Well, there is the second least expensive choice on Logos is the ancient language option. So they do have a fairly inexpensive now. What I initially bought and then have upgraded, you know, I probably have $7,000 or $8,000, $9,000 in my Logos suite. You can, I think, for like $400 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can buy the original languages variation, and it will give you all of those tools in electronic form. What it does, it just saves time.
Oh yeah.
Now the fact that you know how long it takes to translate. If it's a really long sentence like the one we just read from Barber Sheath 127.
Right.
I could spend 4 hours, 3 hours doing a really, really long statement. So, yes, it makes things faster, but it's not fast. Now, part of it is, could I create a translation that was fast where you could go through it and then do it in a matter of minutes? Yes. No, because most of the words I know.
Yeah.
That's... Speed is not conducive to understanding. Doing something quickly and superficially is not conducive to insights.
No.
Translating for me is work. The understanding and the insights are the benefit. That's where the pleasure is.
Mm-hmm.
And so speed is not not something I seek. Easy is not something I seek.
Yeah. But it's so worth it in the sense that it's so confirming just to yourself, not that,
of course,
you have to tell you or you have to tell me.
Right.
It's just so interesting. Okay, I know that's right. There's mathematically no way all this could mean anything else. We're still talking about the Edon, the upright pole. This is not going to be Edon, et cetera, and is and behold, and the henna and now today the Asher plus all that stuff.
Yeah,
you wrote just wonderful stuff in the same little section on about page 12, 13 or so on Asher. That's sufficient. The only reason I did that is just because it's fun. But it reinforced everything you said. I wasn't trying to prove you right. I wasn't trying to prove you wrong. I just said, well, what else? Is there anything else to glean?
And there's
a few little things here and there, but if you didn't do anything, we look at the letters. That would be one step a little bit further that says, oh, okay, well, that has to be that too.
Yeah, the only thing I'd like to
the letters themselves.
Yeah, the only place I'd like to correct you here is that you would, out of not respect for anything other than we are part of the same covenant family, and therefore we have a concern for one another. You said, if what you found was completely different, you would approach this of, what did I miss here? You really ought not do that. You ought to feel
if you find
something that's different, you ought to say, a lot of what I found is contrary to what you said. Let's hash it out. And come to an understanding.
I would send you an email and say, this is just like Roy does and all of us do. And a lot of times there's some things that that I'll talk about. Roy, how can that be? But because it's more about scientific knowledge, and I'll go to him or something like that. Because we get to talk most weeks.
But I don't mind. I'm blindsided. I don't mind.
No. That's all right. I wouldn't.
I'm very comfortable in my relationship.
You also have to be aware that most of these words, I know I'm not talking to you, but generally speaking, most of these words have a negative and a positive sign, And I'm looking at the negative side, and I'm saying, you know, so sometimes I just have to, are we talking about,
right.
is it in that
right.
context, or is it in the other context?
That's right.
But of course,
right. yeah, no, there is a negative and positive
today,
right, a lot of words.
Right.
Yeah. Right, and you've got to filter that out.
Yeah, and
but you have to feel very comfortable saying things that if you say, let's say, I just don't agree with that. It feels free to say that.
No, that's now there is all week's work on that one word, and I can't find anything where you disagreed. It might have been a little different slant on it, here and there and yonder, or the same thing on that. I wouldn't have disagreed with the stuff that you wrote because I found all that rather quickly. You know, I know exactly where you're coming from. It was interesting. All of a sudden, it means stepping. It's always about the path.
Right. The journey.
Along the way.
The way.
The more it and I mean, it's always.
Reinforcing
so, I mean, that
name.
So I say, oh, okay, well, there it is again. There it is again.
There it is again.
Yeah. So when I throw those things at you, it's, I'm very interested in what you say back because you really didn't contradict anything there, and I didn't expect you to. But I would have been interested if you did. Why would you? You know, I would say, well, why?
Yeah, why?
Yeah, because I've got 14
questions. Sometimes there might not be a good answer. There's sometimes that, and sometimes the answer is, you know, I don't remember why I came up with that. You know, I may need a few hours to go back.
Well, you walk away, do a math problem. You can figure out to walk away for a couple hours, sit down, and I'll
get my retention. I might have done it 10 years ago, and I may have forgotten how I came up to that conclusion. It may not be, and so you might bring something up, and I might say, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I'll find out. And it may take us, you know, next show to say, all right, I thought it through, and you know, the fact is, I was wrong. Or here's how I came up with it. And,
these guys have spent 2 weeks now, and they've got one passage and three words. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the reasons I write the way I do, where I say, here's what the word could mean, and here it is. This is another definition, and it's related to this word. And the reason I put all that there a lot of times is for me. If somebody, you know, would later question the translation, how did you come up with this? Well, there it is. That's how I came up with it. That way, you know, it's... They always say a short pencil is better than a long memory.
Yeah.
Write it down, and remember, well, that was the thought process.
Yeah. Yeah, I have all kind of notes off to the side and little notes to myself from comments. Okay,
that
could mean this, it could mean that.
Yeah.
You know, so, it's, but no, I enjoy the study with you. I would never feel embarrassed to say, I don't get that at all.
Don't ever be concerned about embarrassing me. I'm not claiming to be anything other than somebody who is who enjoys the learning. And I get excited about about the insights. But you know, if you find something that is different than what I have said, take me to task. Fully comfortable with that. That's the appropriate thing to do.
I've never felt uncomfortable, you know, asking how do you come up to that. And that was one of the things that was so nice when we first ran across you, because you could. I had a lot of different things because coming out of a Christian frame, even though I knew a lot of stuff. You know, I had some ideas on things, and you were always kind enough to. I'd say, well, what about this? And then I'd say, well, wait a minute. And we probably did more arguing in the first year or so.
Yeah.
You know, certainly the first time I started calling into your programs, and but as it turned out, I get that now, and I can say a couple of things just nobody knows. Sometimes I don't get engaged in certain debates because I don't think you can get there from here, because you just nobody
knows. That's why a lot of the stuff with Roy,
and
it may be the fact that my scientific foundation of knowledge is so inferior to his. That I give up far more readily than he does in some of those discussions. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times I'll just say, you know, I will comment on what you've said up to here, but beyond that, about the best I can do is to say, you know, I don't think I've got the capacity to fully appreciate even four dimensions, much less five, six, and seven, and so, in this particular case, I'm just going to say I I don't know.
Yeah.
You might be right, but I can't go there.
Yeah, I can't jump on the bandwagon or
I
otherwise.
I can appreciate what you're saying and
they
say you
might be right,
Yeah. Part of it, too, you know, you want, like you mentioned a bunch of words. You brought up McComb. You brought up Yasher, for example. Those are words that I have, because I've spent so much time on it, I have a foundation now.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you know, the easier it is to build off of that foundation and to branch out into greater light, if you will. And so that's one of the advantages of doing this. The more you do it, the more the fuller your reservoir is, the stronger your foundation is, the more deeply rooted you are, the more things resonate. That's one of the advantages of doing it. The more you do it, the more you understand, the more you're capable of understanding.
Well, I almost called you this week because I was looking through in Linnery and our English version translation on this very verse, and I could only find one Asher. And I said, wait a minute, where's the second Asher? And they in a simplified version on the new, what is it, the NIV or something like that, translation only with Hebrew words, or they took the Masoretic text and then they wrote off to the side, you know, what their translation was, and they drop an Asher. And I'm going, what the hell is this? And I said, well, where's this? So then I finally went to some more lexicons, I mean, some more interlinearies, and there it was, but, you know, it was exactly there. They just kind of dropped a few words here and there. I've had that experience about three times, and each time I've had
it. Yeah, I've done. Yeah, I'm going a lot of times. Yeah, a lot of times, Kirk, I will look at a translation I've done in the past, and I will see if there's a word or a word order or something that's just different. And so, you know, I'm finding that I have to go to the actual text of the Dead Sea Scrolls, or I've got to go to, and I've got a tool now that gives me the Hebrew of the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Oh, wow.
Or I have to, open up seven or eight interlinears. All or go directly to a Masoretic text or directly to the Dead Sea Scrolls to say what is really there, because the sources are in conflict. It doesn't happen a lot, but
no,
you know, it happens enough.
But you know, no one happens like this week.
You know, that's one of the things that is, you know, like the honorable one, the gay atheist. You know, saying, hey, you know, all of the text has been manipulated and corrupted by men. There's nothing you can rely on. That's true with the Christian New Testament. It's wholly unreliable. I mean, the only thing that you could even say has a chance of being reliable is Matanya, because Matanya is so unchristian that they, for the most part, just left it alone. And so if you can think Matanya in Hebrew, you know, you're probably in pretty decent shape. The Hebrew text, the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, the Masoretic isn't that far off. I mean, what I learned is that in the most altered, which would be Yashia, it's one word in 14 that differs. But even that one word in 14, which is, you know, what that means, that it's like 93% accurate or something of that nature, that even in the one word and 14, it's off. It could be something just like a preposition, plural versus singular, really small kinds of things, or just a clerical mistake of some nature.
Yeah.
They're not all big. Most of them are really small.
Yeah.
And so you look at that, and then you look at how much we have from the Dead Sea Scrolls and how similar they really are.
Remarkable.
Yeah, you really have a pretty extraordinary quality in terms of textual integrity when you're coming up with the Hebrew text. I don't know. If you're reading, I'm sure, the Talmud or the rabbinical documents, that's a different story. But they did a pretty decent job of scribal consistency, veracity as it relates to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And if you get, particularly when you move beyond the Masoretic diacritical markings and just look at the letters,
right,
and look at the, what word is conveyed by those letters.
Yeah, and I do. In fact, I even have a program that has both. I just take them all.
Yeah. So you do that, and boy, you've got some textual fidelity. It's really solid. Is it perfect? No. But it's probably between the Dead Sea Scrolls, the removing the diacritical markings, and the depth of knowledge that's available in an amplified fashion from the lexicons. You know, you're probably in the range of 98-99%
accurate.
And because Yahweh repeats himself from so many different perspectives, that's more than good enough. I'm looking forward to having perfection. But what we have is more than good enough.
Yeah, you ain't going to fall off the track because of this.
No.
I'm not going to worry about it. I'm just going to adjust where I have to. And
more than
ask questions.
There is it's like all these people that claim to have private revelation, and you know, and of course it's all rubbish they claim. The amount of information that is available to us from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms to study is infinitely more than we could dissect and understand, even if we had 100 lifetimes to devote to it.
Yeah.
We do not need any additional revelation.
No.
If anything, there's far more of it than we could possibly benefit from. So, private revelation, I think, is for the birds.
So what should we be doing tomorrow? I mean, next week.
Well, we can move to the next statement that has a henna in it, because we have devoured all that can be learned from Barbara Sheath 1:27. We'll move to what is, let's see, essentially, we're going to move to the henna that's deployed in Barbara Sheath 6:13. So that's page 16 of 87 of chapter 9. That's where we'll pick it up.
I guess we're well before I leave you. Okay. Okay. I'm with you. Okay. I'll be ready.
That's what we'll pick it up. And our observations, if there's a new story, there are a couple of new stories that I thought were germane to that program. And we'll bring up a new story. Or if you find one, bring one up. And as it relates to this Barbara Sheath 6:13, and as you can see, what I did here is I sneak up on 6:13 because that's the use of henna, but we don't jump in there. We jump in much at 6:1 and start the story from there. You know, if you find a term or terms that you want to more fully amplify, like there's a chalal there, which is a really interesting Hebrew term. There's Yalad, which is, I think, speaks of birth, another interesting term. You've studied Tob before. Tob is desirable, beneficial. The feminine of Ish is there, Isha, which also can be feminine, mother, woman, or the feminine word for fire, feminine maternal aspect of Yahweh's nature. There's neshama. It's going to come up, another one of those really interesting terms. It's a harder one to develop. Another one that's really interesting, Kirk, is Ashar, which is typically translated flesh, but its primary meaning is preaching. To proclaim, to publish, to preach. So it is both flesh, biological life, animal life, corporeal construct, subject to decay, but also the verbal root is to proclaim, to publish, to preach. So Bashar is a really interesting term.
Alrighty.
Okay. Oh, and that one of the terms is going to come up, and I did a whole study on it, but feel free to challenge it or expand on it. The phylum.
Oh, yes.
So that, you know what the phylum are?
Yeah, those were the ones they keep trying to call them giants.
That is correct. And the phylum, the translation, my translation is those who prostrate themselves and are still
born. Yeah, the prayers.
From the verbal root in the fall, to fall in prayer, battle in status,
yeah.
Going
yeah.
from a higher position to a lower one. Those who are separated and die, those who bow down, falling prostrate to worship something on the ground, those who neglect and are thereby neglected, those who attack to conquer in an offensive military action, becoming inferior in the process, those subject to miscarriage and thus untimely death.
Yeah. So, I was looking at that one week. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, because I make a big deal about Nephilim. And then we won't get to it in this next show, but because of Nephilim, I devoted, 15 pages to the errors in English translations. When we get to those shows, I think it's important, and I don't know of any other way to convey that because it's so much detailed research, but to read it. So we'll read it and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
And I don't know if there's another way to convey it.
Great chapter. Number 8. This is just a...
This is actually number... This is number 9.
I'm sorry, number 9.
Yeah, 9. It was devoted entirely to Hannah. 10 is actually my favorite. And maybe it's 10 that has the errant translations. I don't know if it's 9 or 10. But I think it's 10 where we use henna to walk through all of the conditions of the covenant.
Huh. That'd be fun, too. It's great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for working so hard. We appreciate you.
I can see
all I have. Everybody listening.
You too. Thanks for the study on Asher.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I appreciate being able to play. This is great.
Yeah, my fun. It's fun. Good night, Kurt.
Shabbat shalom. Good night.
Shabbat shalom. Good night, Kurt.